Hello, this is Hannah with the Ford County Chronicle, dated October 8th, 2025. We begin today's reading on the front page with the article titled "To Live and Learn" by Dave Hinton. Paxton, Neil Kottke, and Jennifer Reeling graduated high school in decidedly different eras, the 1950s and the 1980s, respectively. Yet each, in their own way, encouraged Paxton Buckley Lota High School students attending a Friday afternoon noon assembly to take advantage of the opportunity to learn not just in a classroom, but also through life experiences. Reeling and Kottke, as well as Paul Flesner, were inducted into the PBL Alumni Hall of Fame in what was homecoming weekend. The three are successful alumni of schools that today comprise PBL. A Ford Central graduate, Flesner, a Microsoft executive and venture capitalist, led a worldwide team of more than 25,000 employees. He did not attend the Hall of Fame ceremonies, which included a meet and greet and introductions at the high school football field that evening prior to the Panthers game against Chillicothe, Illinois Valley Central. Reeling, a 1986 graduate of Paxton High School, was one of the first athletic trainers in the District of Columbia schooling system. She retired in 2023 and has won numerous awards for her forward-thinking practices. A 1957 graduate of Roberts Thawville High School, Kottke founded a proprietary commodity futures and options trading firm with offices in Chicago, New York, London, and Singapore. He served as vice chairman of the Chicago Board of Trade and chairman of the Chicago Board of Trade Clearing Corporation, and has been actively involved in farming and ranching. Kottke earned degrees from the University of Illinois and Northwestern University before serving as a lieutenant in the U.S. Army overseas from 1963 to 1965. The 80-something honoree cited an experience in front of an Army unit that reinforced that there are many ways to learn. "I earned 2 degrees," Kottke said. "I also got a commission in the U.S. Army and went through combat officers training. Yet suddenly, I found myself in front of a platoon of combat engineers. I soon realized I didn't know what I was doing. However, a master sergeant, an 8th-grade graduate, showed him how it was done. He knew what to do in front of that platoon," Kottke said. As Kottke noted to his PBL student audience, "You never know what avenue you'll find, where you will need to learn, and how you will learn." Reeling, who said it was seemed like yesterday when she last sat in the same bleachers as the students, and like many of them, wondered what life would bring after high school. She encouraged, "Practice resilience. Failure is just a chance to redirect. Learn a lesson, it's progress." She said the students have incredible resources available to them at the high school. "Go to your teachers. They are not here just to teach you by a formula. They are here to help you learn how to think, how to analyze, and how to solve problems. Find a teacher who challenges you and spend the extra time there. The relationship will pay you dividends." Kottke, who has been farming in Ford County since 1963, owns and o operates Oklahoma ranches, managing cattle across 5 states with his family-owned Kottke Cattle Co. Noting he had been around the block a few times, Kottke said he has seen 12 presidents, and I can tell you the difference between Dwight Eisenhower and Donald Trump is quite remarkable. There has been change. He said change is not new, and it will continue. You'll have to adapt, and you'll have to learn as you go. You're preparing for the game. Using a sports analogy, Kottke said, "You play as you practice. Individuals who put in effort during practice sessions and prepare are more likely to excel on game day." Reeling said students should choose what is right for them in taking their next steps. Whether you go to college, choose a trade, start a family, join the military, or enter the workforce, they will figure it out. Use your priorities to guide you. Show up and do the work. Stay late, rewrite the paper, go the extra mile. Success is about showing up consistently and doing your best work, even when no one is watching. Reeling encouraged the students to be grateful for their community. "It may be stifling to live in a small town," she said. "Everyone knows your business, and eyes are always on you. These are the same people who teach you lessons, keep you safe, show up for you, and help you grow. I stand here today because of the foundation I received here." Added Reeling, "Remember, you don't have to make a difference in the world, just make a difference in your world." Earning athletic training degrees from Millikan University and Indiana State University, Reeling's impact included her clinical skills in injury prevention, evaluation, treatment, and rehabilitation, as well as her leadership and mentorship. A winner of numerous awards in her field, her efforts have led to the adoption of more holistic and patient-centered approaches to sports medicine. She has been inducted into two athletic training Hall of Fames, including inductions this summer in the National Association. Reeling has also been cited for her contributions to the education and development of future athletic trainers. Flesner, a 1981 graduate of Illinois State University, where he majored in business and information technology, joined Microsoft in 1994 and rose to a place within Microsoft under Bill Gates' inner circle. He oversaw business units generating annual revenue exceeding $7 billion. Flesner and his wife Sue, a fellow 1981 ISU College of Business alumna, have been heavily involved in the fight to cure cystic fibrosis. Both of their sons were diagnosed with the disease. Flesner served as a board member of the Cystic Fibrosis Foundation Therapeutics and was instrumental in the concept of venture philanthropy, securing a private gift of $20 million that contributed to the approval of the first drug targeting the underlying cause of the disease. The next article is titled Public Hearing Set for Co-located Solar Projects Just Outside Gibson City by Will Brumleaf. Gibson City. The Ford County Zoning Board of Appeals will hold a public hearing at 6 p.m. Monday, October 27th to consider comments and make a recommendation regarding the requested issuance of a conditional use permit for two co-located commercial solar projects, Goldenrod East LLC and Goldenrod West LLC, to be located just outside Gibson City on land that was once part of Railside Golf Course. A public notice published in the Ford County Chronicle listed the applicants for the special use permit as Ansvar Goffer, head of business development for JAS Power LLC, and Doug Brucker, property owner, and said the involved land at 699-561 North 500 East, just north of Gibson City, is currently zoned for agricultural use. The hearing will be at the county courthouse, 200 West State Street, Paxton, where testimony and evidence will be accepted with witnesses cross-examined. Written testimony can be directed to the zoning office in advance of the hearing as well. The petition for the permit and related documents may be reviewed at the courthouse. According to the website of Greenvolt Power, JAS Power is a subsidiary of Greenvolt LLC and provides a variety of technologies, including solar, photovoltaics, and battery energy storage systems. We specialize in solar development projects with a unique focus on, wherever possible, continued agricultural production, the site said. From conducting thorough site surveys to collaborating with government authorities, we ensure that our solar farms comply with all necessary permits and regulations while minimizing ecological impact. Prioritizing sustainability and responsible land use practices, we strive to create solar projects that not only generate green energy, but also preserve and protect the habitats and natural resources in the areas where we operate. The website said Guffar focuses on project siting, permitting, interconnection, and procurement. Over the last 20 years, Mr. Guffar has developed more than 1,300 megawatts of solar and wind generation capacity across Canada and the United States, and concluded several billion dollars of M&A transactions, the site said. Mr. Guffar was co-founder of AIM Power Gen Corporation, now part of ENGIE North America, and took AIM Power Gen from startup to multi-billion dollar power producer. The next article is titled Paxton Police Officers Wearing, Selling Pink Patches in October by Will Brumlev. Paxton. Like almost anyone, almost all of the Paxton Police Department's seven officers have a loved one affected by cancer. During Breast Cancer Awareness Month, they are joining law enforcement officers from across the country and wearing pink patches on their uniforms while selling them too, to help raise funds for the Pink Patch Project. The project is very important to the officers of the Paxton Police Department, Police Chief Coy Cornett said Thursday, the day after his agency's month-long breast cancer awareness and fundraising campaign got underway. The pink patches are available for purchase for $10 apiece until the limited supply obtained by the police department runs out. Patch purchases can be made at City Hall, 145 South Market Street, or the Police Department, 755 North Railroad Ave. As of Wednesday, October 1st, Cornett and his officers have already sold at least 10 patches from among 100 purchased recently by the Police Department and received on the evening of Tuesday, September 30th, he said. This is the second 100-count batch of pink patches purchased by the police department this year, with an initial 100 acquired at the end of June using vehicle impound fees, not taxes, for a cost of $281, Cornett said. We used 14 of those first 100 patches for officer uniform shirts, Cornett said. The remaining 86 patches were sold within 2 weeks. Through patch sales and donations, the department ended up giving $895 to the Pink Patch Project, Cornett said. Cornett credited Paxton Police Officer Tom Sink as the person who laid the groundwork for us to join the Pink Patch Project. Officer Sink designed the patch and completed all the footwork for Paxton Police to be involved with the Pink Patch Project, Cornett said. According to information provided by Cornett this past summer, the Pink Patch Project's mission is to raise awareness about the life-saving benefits of early detection of breast cancer while helping fund research, treatment, and education for finding a cure. Our program revolves around vibrant pink patches uniquely designed by participating agencies for their involvement in the Pink Patch Project, the information from Cornett said. Throughout Breast Cancer Awareness Month in October, public safety employees proudly wear these pink patches on their regular duty uniforms, sparking conversations within the community and promoting the importance of early detection and ongoing efforts against this disease. The Pink Patch Project traces its roots back to the Seal Beach, California Police Department, whose officers wore pink patches on their uniform shirts during Breast Cancer Awareness Month in 2013. In 2015, the Irwindale, California Police Department took the idea a step further and sold patches to the community, raising more than $20,000 for the City of Hope. In 2016, then Irwindale Police Officer Anthony Miranda then took the idea to the Los Angeles Police Chiefs Association, and 25 local agencies came on board. Since then, the project has expanded to several hundred partner agencies throughout the world and includes partners from police, sheriff, fire, EMS, and federal departments worldwide, according to information provided by Cornett. Cornett said there are nearly 1,000 participating agencies in the Pink Patch Project, including Paxton Police. These patches symbolize our commitment to raising awareness and supporting those affected by breast cancer, stated a flyer at the police department's 4th of July informational booth at Pills Park, where Cornett and other officers first promoted the fundraiser. The next article is titled Pursuing Passion, Chapman Leaves Local Park District by Andrew Roston, Paxton. Jordan Chapman is stepping down as the Paxton Park District's Recreation Director. His last day of employment with the Park District is Thursday, October 9th, after which he will work as the development manager at an animal rescue organization in Will County. Prior to working at the Park District, Chapman worked for 7 years as the director of the St. Anne-based Kankakee County Humane Foundation, and then as assistant director of Unified Initiatives for Special Olympics Illinois. I have an opportunity to go back into animal rescue, Chapman said Friday, October 3rd. It is something that I love more than anything. I just couldn't pass it up. It's like my first love. I just couldn't resist. It's very bittersweet. As much as I don't want to go, I also know where my heart lies, and that's with the dogs and the cats. Chapman offered to work remotely for the Park District after his last day to make sure there's not a lapse in communication and programming. Matt Quinlan, the Paxton Park Board's president, said no decision had been made by the board as of Friday, October 3rd, regarding whether to accept Chapman's offer as the district searches for a replacement. There's a lot that has been revamped, and for a board member to step in, I figured that would be a big task, so I offered to stand remotely and make sure everything continues as is, Chapman said. I want to make sure our community didn't miss out or have a lapse in anything because of my departure. I mostly worry about our kids. Chapman was hired as the Park District's Recreation Director in July 2024. The number one focus of mine has always been making sure we have a good program and that kids are getting not only development in a sport or activity, but fun out of it. And I feel like we've accomplished that in the past year, Chapman said. I think there's a standard now set that our families should expect from the Park District, and I hope that everybody continues to push for that standard. We have something that families can rely on as a good program, no matter what the sport is, so I would love to see them push to continue that. Chapman said he will miss his relationships with families, kids, and athletes involved in the Park District. That has been genuinely the highlight of this position, Chapman said. It's been a lot of fun. I'm still going to come and bug everybody that I've met. I made a point in my brain that I want to pour into those friendships and make sure everybody I connect with knows that was genuine. In his time here, Chapman worked to help make the community, the Park District included, more inclusionary for residents with special needs. I'm hoping we can get some business or somebody local to continue employment of all our friends with all of their different abilities, Chapman said. I just hope that momentum continues and that this community can continue to foster a place of inclusion and love for everyone. In other Park District news, the district last week received a $2,500 donation from the recently dissolved Federated Church of Paxton, in addition to a $500 microgrant recently received from the Community Foundation of East Central Illinois. A Friend to Many, Doug McCoy Loved Sports, Family, by Andrew Rostin, LODA. During their 30 years of friendship, Doug McCoy and Mark Prina competed a lot against each other. The two even placed a bet on who would outlive the other. Whoever lost had to buy the other lunch, Prina said. Mr. McCoy passed away on Saturday, September 7th. He was 64. Well, he won that bet too, because he can't pay for it now, Prina said. We didn't think that through. Prina first met Mr. McCoy after graduating from Paxton Buckley Loda High School in 1996 and starting a summer job working for the City of Paxton Street Department, where Mr. McCoy was employed for 28 years from 1985 to 2013. He was a really good worker, Paxton Mayor Bill England said of Mr. McCoy. He took care of the equipment. Mr. McCoy kind of took me under his wing, Prina said. That's how we became really close friends. We did a lot together. From there, Prina became familiar with Mr. McCoy's competitive nature, which came out in various forms, even during their lunch breaks. We would flip quarters to see who would have to buy a quarter pop in the pop machine at IGA at break time, Prina said. We'd flip quarters to see who'd win two of three, and if he didn't win, he'd want to flip for three out of five. He wanted to keep playing until he won. We loved to compete against each other. We were both competitive people. Doug was a super competitive person. Mr. McCoy and Prina soon found a favorite after-work competition, golf. He loved all kinds of sports, but he especially loved golf, Prina said. That was where he could still compete. He couldn't play baseball, basketball, or football anymore, but he could compete at golf throughout his whole life. That's what he loved about it. We really became close playing golf with each other. He taught me a lot about it. Mr. McCoy eventually became superintendent of Lakeview Country Club's golf course at Bales Lake west of Loda in the early 2010s. That was his pride and joy, Prina said. He loved that golf course and loved taking care of it, especially the putting greens. He knew that we had some of the best greens in Central Illinois, and he worked really hard to keep it that way. Mr. McCoy not only took care of the golf course, but played more than his share of golf there as well, winning the Lakeview Club Championships a record 11 times. Mr. McCoy also set a Lakeview course record for lowest 18-hole round, shooting 64 twice. Prina was with Mr. McCoy the second time. Prina recalled Mr. McCoy being a 20-foot putt away from resetting the club record at 64. "He kind of got on a hot streak the last two holes," Prina said. "I didn't tell him because he was on such a hot streak. I didn't want to break his rhythm." As Prina recalled, Mr. McCoy was within an inch or two of making the putt. "I told him, 'Did you realize that was for 63? He had no idea," Prina said. "He was just trying to win each hole. It was really neat to see him do that. It was a pretty neat experience to be with him on that. That's why he loved taking care of the course. He took so much pride in it." Prina also recalled many late nights competing against Mr. McCoy in closest to the pin contests. "We'd do it all night long," Prina said. "We had a game where we played until we couldn't find our golf balls because it was so dark. That was just his nature. That was his mentality." Long before becoming an avid golfer, Mr. McCoy played football for a Paxton High School team that went 10-1 under legendary coach Norm Henderson in 1978. Before Mr. McCoy's senior season, Mr. Henderson went to Clifton Central and asked Mr. McCoy if he would like to move with him, an offer that Mr. McCoy declined. The Paxton Mustangs went 8-2 in Mr. McCoy's senior year. "I knew of him since I was a little kid," said Jeff Graham, a Paxton graduate who would go on to be the head coach for Paxton Buckley Loda High School's football team from 2002 to 2005 and from 2011 to 2018. "He was one of the toughest running back and fullbacks that Paxton has seen. I'll never forget he was number 36, and I was so happy to have the privilege to wear that number my freshman year." When Mr. Henderson took over as head coach at PBL High School in 2000, Mr. McCoy joined him as an assistant coach. Mr. Henderson retired after the 2001 season. Succeeding him was Graham, who worked alongside Mr. McCoy and Mr. Henderson as an assistant coach in 2001. During his stints as PBL head coach, Graham found Mr. McCoy to be arguably his most trusted assistant. "I value Doug's opinion in football and in life," Graham said. "If you know Doug, you know he always thought outside the box. He came up with things that you wouldn't think of. I would often say, 'Where'd you come up with that?'" Graham also described Mr. McCoy as detail-oriented but flexible in the big picture of things. After the 2011 season, in which the PBL Panthers went 2-7, Mr. McCoy diagnosed a problem with the team. Doug said, "Jeff, the problem is we are not paying attention to the details. Details as in touching lines, starting behind the line, paying attention to fundamentals instead of letting them slide," Graham said. But in the big picture, Doug was hands off. He would say, "Jeff, we need to let these kids play. Let them call the plays." He always said, "They are the ones out on the field, so give them the ownership." With Mr. McCoy's help, Graham led PBL to 5 straight playoff appearances from 2014 to 2018. According to Graham, Mr. McCoy helped everyone off the field as well. "I guarantee you Doug McCoy would have done anything for any one of those kids that he established a relationship with on that football field," Graham said. "Just like he lived his life, Doug modeled what we always talked about, working for and loving one another. He was the most genuine, honest person that I've met, and he lived life that way. He loved people, and they loved him, especially his former football players. We had some good football teams, but most important to Doug were the relationships he built with these young men." Mr. McCoy gave Graham's oldest son, Tate, his first car when he turned 16. "My kids were like family to Doug," Graham said. "It's a huge reflection of Doug's character. Doug loved his family and friends, and he would do anything for them. Simply put, he was a generous person. He didn't dwell on money and personal items, but rather having fun, being around, and laughing with people, and making people feel good about themselves." Both of Graham's sons, Tate and Ty Graham, worked for Mr. McCoy at Lakeview Country Club. "He'd always laugh and tell them, 'It's just grass,'" Graham said. "But take a look at that course and those greens. It might be just grass in the big picture, but for greens to look that way, someone is detail-oriented, and that would be Doug." Even with all the memories people have of Mr. McCoy for his golfing and coaching abilities, his devotion to his family was the thing multiple people said they remember the most about him. Mr. McCoy was preceded in death by his wife, Vicky McCoy, who passed away at age 60 in July 2023. In the decade prior to her passing, she battled Huntington's disease. What impressed me most was the dedication and compassion he showed for his wife when she was so very ill, Englode said. He took care of her in those last years. That just speaks volumes to the man's character. I think that's a very admirable thing. He set a great example as a husband and father, Johnson said. He was so dedicated to Vicky. Mr. McCoy is survived by his wife, Krisha Whitcomb, children, Jake McCoy and Samantha Cox, and grandchildren. He was the best dad. He was my rock. He was my best friend. I'll miss him so much, Samantha Cox said in a Facebook post. He will be truly missed by many, Graham said. Obituary, Jacob McMillan. Jacob Howard McMillan, 34, of Piper City, passed away on October 6, 2025, as a result of an ATV accident. Jacob loved outdoors, from snowmobiles to ATVs and dirt bikes to camping. He took great pride in being an arborist and anything he could do outdoors. Jacob spent countless hours rebuilding motors and welding. Most importantly, he was a true family man and a true friend. He loved spending time with Alani and the kids. Jacob was a member of the IBEW Local 51 and a mentor to his former crew at Kendall. He was also a former member of the Piper City Fire and Emergency Medical Responders. A celebration of life will be held at a later date. Obituary, James Graham. A visitation will be held on Wednesday, October 15th, 2025 from 10 a.m. until 12 p.m. at Cox Knapp Funeral Home in Paxton. Funeral service will be held following the visitation on Wednesday, October 15th, 2025 at 12 p.m., also at the funeral home. A graveside service will follow at Glen Cemetery in Paxton. Obituary, Clyde E. Hudson, Elliot. Clyde Edward Hudson, 85, of Elliot, died Friday, October 3rd, 2025, after a short battle with cancer. Visitation will be from 9:30 to 11 a.m. Friday, October 10th, at Rosenbaum Funeral Home in Gibson City. A funeral service will follow at 11 a.m. Burial will be at Dummer Township Cemetery in Gibson City. Mr. Hudson was born February 4, 1940, in Gibson City at the home of his parents. He married Linda L. Brucker in Cropsey on March 12, 1960. She survives. Memorial contributions may be made to Blood Cancer United. This was Hannah with the Ford County Chronicle from the week of October 8, 2025. Have a great day. I look forward to reading with you sometime soon.